Hello, this is Utah Phillips, and welcome to Loafer's Glory, the Hobo Jungle of the Mind.
My mother was 88 years old, never used glasses, drank right out of the bottle. So anyway, I was in New York. I got in a plane. I had three pieces of luggage. I said to the man, I want this piece of luggage to go to Miami. I want this piece to go to Cleveland. And I want this piece of luggage to go to Toronto. He says, we can't do that. You did it last week. I flew on the plane with Pepper King. Hicking, hicking. Now, I said, Doctor, I have a ringing in my ear. What will I do? He said, don't answer. I said, Doc, it hurts when I do that. He said, don't do that. I said, Doc, my foot hurts. What'll I do for it? He said, limp. I said, I got a trick knee. He said, join the circus.
Well, of course, that was Henny Youngman. There at the beginning, we mourn the death of Henny Youngman, a man vastly misunderstood by those who had the thinnest notion of who God is and what God does. God is not dead, he's only embarrassed. This is Utah Phillips, of course, here with Steve Baker, the engineer. Jimmy and Nancy Borsdorf did that opening music, Loafer's Glory. We are here at community radio station KVMR, the jewel of Nevada City. Nevada City, California, as Rambo would say, where even the birds are chained to the sky. Well, it's been bruited about here at the station that the over 100 volunteer broadcasters were encouraged to address the question, what music would you want to take with you if you were marooned on a desert island? I thought about that question, decided whether I wanted to participate. I thought it was a fairly meaningless question in that on a desert island, I would probably starve to death before I could find a record player, much less a palm tree to plug it into. So I assumed that the question, in fact, meant what kind of music would you play or do you play in isolation when you're by yourself? Well, I spent very little time by myself, sequestered. I suppose the longest stretch was at the High Unitarian Lamasery in Ramapo, New Jersey, where our abbot, Bud White, we nicknamed him Rinso, officiated. He was excommunicated for propounding a Unitarian heresy. You hit my car, therefore I think you are. But we do miss him. It's at the Lamasery that I took my vow of loquacity. I decided when I went in there that I wanted to take music, things of my childhood, that would take me back to the pleasant days of youth. My most vivid recollection of childhood was a Saturday matinee at the Old Liberty Theater in Cleveland and then the Utah Theater in Salt Lake. We had finished free dish night on Friday when my brother ushered. On Saturday, we were there bright and early with all the other kids in the neighborhood. There was a stage show of some kind, perhaps every month a bike giveaway. And then one of the local dance academies would have all the kids out there in their heavy tap shoes, maybe Martell's Marvels, launching themselves into a Terpsichorean flight. And then the lights would dim, and up would come the cartoon, and then the serial, Spy Smasher or Rober the Conqueror. You moved from week to week, chapter to chapter, and then the double reel, the double feature motion picture, generally Westerns, Hoot Gibson or old Randolph Scott. Well, my favorite thing to do during those matinees, you see, at the end of the matinee, the end of the movie, the hero would always, of course, vanquish the bandito and then get the young woman. And the closing scene would be them kissing together. And that was, the kids hated that. The kids would hurl things at the screen and they would. Well, this is what I did when I knew that scene was approaching. I would take my dime bag of popcorn, go up to the mezzanine, and I would Hold it under the spout from the water fountain and turn the popcorn into a sodden mass. I would walk up the ramp and then down into the loges, the front row of the balcony. And just as that kiss commenced, I would lean over the balcony and go, and pour all that sodden popcorn down onto the kids below. It was pandemonium. Well, I wonder how many of you are going to remember the action that goes along with these sounds. Cast your mind back. Not that far, up this way a little bit. Yeah, right in there. And see what this brings up in your mind.
How do? Welcome to my shop. Let me cut your mop. Let me shave your crop. Daintily. Hey you, don't look so perplexed. Why must you be vexed? Can't you see you're next? Yes, you're next. You're so next. How about a nice close shave? Teach your whiskers to behave. Lots of lather, lots of soap. Please hold still, don't be a dope. Now we're ready for the scraping. There's no use to try escaping. Yell and scream and rant and rave. It's no use, you need a shave.
Ooh, ouch, ouch, ooh, ouch, ooh, ooh, ouch.
There, you're nice and clean. Although your face looks like it might have gone through a machine.
Oh, where do I get that wabbit?
What would you want with a wabbit? Can't you see that I'm much sweeter? I'm your little senorita. You are my type of guy. Let me straighten your tie, and I shall dance for you.
Were you able to follow all of that? Bugs on Broadway, that was his Barber of Seville. Ah, we loved those things. I'm a Warner cartoon junkie. I've tried to collect all of them, although I don't have anything to play them on, but they certainly sparked the imagination. Gave me a love for opera, for one thing. You know, they did one cartoon that was all Wagner, too. Killed a wabbit, killed a wabbit. Boy, it's a marvel that we remember those things, you know. It's like my mind is like a psychic landfill. Well, there I was at the High Unitarian Lamasery in Ramapo, New Jersey, in seclusion. We studied the typical Unitarian fare, Baptism by Emerson, Unitarian children's games like Committee of the Mountain, where the kids sit around on the top of the rock and discuss how they're going to share power until the wine and the brie run out. I took a sabbatical from the seminary to go to Harvard Square, the Harvard Square subway stop, where I participated in the archaeological dig, an ancient Unitarian cult site, where I was rewarded by discovering a deeply incised stone which proved to be a Neolithic library card, thus proving that it was indeed a Unitarian cult site. I whiled away my time at the monastery tediously illuminating doctoral theses on the spiritual implications of cheese mold. But my constant companion was bashful Brother Oswald, the dobro player for Roy Acuff for many, many years, an elegant old man whom I met in Montreal, Canada, while I was hosting a folklife festival there. I asked him how he came to take up the dobro, and he said that he was playing in Kalamazoo, Michigan, playing the banjo, telling stories, being a rude rustic from the South, and nobody was in the audience. And he tried to find out why not, looked across the street at the competing theater and saw that Lonnie and his Hawaiians were there. The Hawaiian touring bands during the early 1920s were all the rage in America. And he saw the fellow in the show playing the lap steel guitar, and he thought, well, if that's what they're listening to, I probably ought to learn how to play it. I love bashful Brother Oswald defines the dobro to me. Listen to his End of the World.
Thank you.
Isn't that so fine? Isn't that so fine? Every now and then I really got to have something that's just so over-sentimental. As they say in country music, just greasy. Oh, my. End of the world, bashful Brother Oswald. Well, now, to the question, what kind of music do I play in my solitude? If I were to be completely isolated, I would not want to be there without something of the spoken word, the music implicit in our language. You know, I had a friend over in Korea, Katusuk, Koreans attached to the United States Army, who spoke some English, and he said to me, the first time he heard English spoken, he thought that we were singing. I remember, well, let's see, going back before Korea, I was stationed at Fort Monmouth, New Jersey. They were trying to teach me how to be a radar repairman. They and I figured out about a month into it that we had both made a terrible mistake. I could not add two and two and come out with the right answer. But nonetheless, they persisted, I persisted, and finally it got to a point where I needed a top-secret security clearance. Well, I had written my mother and mentioned that to her. She got on an airplane. It was an old Howard Hughes Constellation with the whirligigs on and propellers, you know, and flew all the way to New York. I got a pass and went up to talk to her because she said it was an emergency. She took me to dinner and told me that my paternal father had been a communist and there wasn't a chance in hell I was going to get a security clearance. But what I mean to say is that evening after we had dinner, she took me over to the Phoenix Theater there in New York and to watch Bernard Shaw's St. Joan. Oh, it was a beautiful, beautiful play. But what particularly enchanted me was the young, at that time, Irish actress by the name of Siobhan McKenna creating the role of St. Joan. Well, I searched and searched while I was around New York, and finally I found an old record from Ireland of Siobhan McKenna reciting poetry. Let's listen to her now doing I Am Raftery.
This is a translation by James Stevens of an old Gaelic poem called I Am Raftery, written by Anthony Raftery, one of my favorite Gaelic poets. He was blind and he used to play the fiddle and write wonderful poetry. He had red hair and spindly legs, and although he wasn't much to look at, he always seemed to have a way with the women. But this is one of his later poems, I Am Raftery. I am Raftery the poet, full of hope and love. My eyes without sight, my mind without torment. Going west on my journey by the light of my heart, tired and weary, to the end of the road. Behold me now with my back to a wall, playing music to empty pockets. And if my memory serves me well, here it is in the original Gaelic. Misha raftri an file, lan dochas is gra, le suilev gan solas, le cunas gan cro. Dol shir mashtir, le dochas mochri, bam agus tirsach, gudere mochli. Vech an ishme, is mochul le bala, a shinim kyol, ma foki fala.
Oh, restful. I love to listen to language that I don't understand because I can apprehend the music of it. Sounds themselves have meaning irrespective of the literal meaning of the words. I forgot to mention at the beginning here that support for this program was provided by the Heishan World Fund and the Tides Foundation. And we have, of course, had the technical assistance and support of the Raven Radio Theater. That's Joe McHugh. I wouldn't want to forget that because without him, we couldn't do it. Mosquitoes. I think the principal problem I had at the Unitarian Monastery is with the enormous mosquitoes that bred around the Delaware Water Gap. This was in northern New Jersey. It was one of our Unitarian nuns was making lye soap in a big iron kettle down there in the courtyard. I went down to watch. The mosquitoes got on me so hard that I tipped the soap out of that kettle, turned it over, and crawled in underneath it. It was about, A minute later, those bills started pecking away through the iron of that kettle. All I could do was take off my shoe and beat their bills over so they were stuck fast, but then they took off of that iron kettle and we never did find it. Those were some large mosquitoes. Pest control, that's what I needed, pest control. Well, fortunately, I had Jenks Tex Carmen with me. Now, Jenks Tex Carmen was the first of the Hawaiian Cowboys. And you're never going to hear this guy on the radio unless I play him. And you hear him, you know why you never hear him on the radio. This man had a voice that would take the varnish off a canoe paddle. And his guitar playing was genuinely irritating. I mean, abrasive. So if you have any old rats or mice or cockroaches or ants in your kitchen or in your house, you turn your radio all the way up, open the doors and windows, and they will be gone. Here's Jenks Tex Carmen playing the new beach at Waikiki. Wow, you know, we could have faded that out early, but I wanted to see how much you could take. Did they head for their holes? Oh, you bet. Well, Jenks Tex Carmen, one of the unknown voices of early Hawaiian cowboy music. If you decide that you have or continue to have trouble with pests and want to duplicate that sound, you could fling an empty garbage can down a flight of stairs and probably have the same effect. The question of solitude has always fascinated me. I remember Mae Sarton's wonderful book about that, and her talking about it in the new book I'm reading called My 82nd Year. Was it Alfred North Whitehead, the philosopher, said religion is what one does with one's solitude. It's a very busy time. Let me tell you a couple of stories that I would carry with me wherever I go and ponder. There was a son of a Bavarian rabbi by the name of Joseph Schmidt. Joseph Schmidt, was an operatic tenor of the bel canto variety, trained in Vienna. He became enormously popular during the Weimar, during the post-First World War Germany. He was a radio star. There wasn't a radio opera that wasn't complete without that was complete without Joseph Schmidt. He starred in many, many movies. They were doing movie musicals just like we were doing in Hollywood. And the reason he never took stage roles was because he was less than 5 feet tall. Of course, in the movies, he could stand on a box. He traveled to the United States. He had a triumphal tour of Mexico and South America. He was well known all over Europe. Came back to Germany, found his funds had been impounded because he was a Jew. His old friends had abandoned him, went into exile in Belgium until it fell, made his way painfully across Germany to a displaced persons camp in Switzerland, where after a couple of months he contracted tuberculosis and died. I had the honor, when I was playing in Switzerland, to visit his grave outside of Zurich and place some flowers on it. I first heard of Joseph Schmidt from a young Jewish friend who became one of my great teachers, a young Jewish scholar who, in his garret in New York City, played his music for me. Old, old, old recordings of Joseph Schmidt. I stood beside that grave, pondered that story, and I wrote Joseph Schmidt a poem. Joseph Schmidt's patron, by the way, was Beniamino Gigli, the great lyric tenor from Italy, and he wrote him repeatedly from the displaced persons camp in Switzerland, and Gigli never answered. Why? Because his patron was Mussolini. Dear Beniamino, here in this camp I am one of several thousand bystanders overwhelmed by our times. I am ill and can no longer sing. How can I ask you to save my life when you will not acknowledge my existence? My old friend, isn't the music enough? Why can we not simply become two old men sunning by the wall, silent, dreaming of how well we once filled the silence? Heute will ich mit keinem tauschen, wer so wissen, wer so wimmer sein. Heute will ich mich berauschen, alles direkt vorbei. Heute ist der schönste Tag in meinem Leben. Heute ist der schönste Tag im Monat Mai. Joseph Schmidt. You know, if I sound halting, out of breath, unsure while I tell these stories, it's because I've wondered and wondered and pondered how I could share these with other people. They have a great deal of meaning in my life. I don't know how they would have meaning in other people's lives, except that they describe a world that is lost. Let's break now for an intermission. Thank you.
the zip code 95959.
Kenny Hall from Fresno, as I've mentioned so many times before, but I want to keep saying his name because I'm really serious about it. This is a man in his 70s, been playing joyous music all of his life, and deserves to be heard by millions. He deserves one of those National Heritage Awards that they occasionally give out. Well, back to that story. You know, stories are connected to other stories where they become simply longer stories. I want to pursue this one a little bit more because that's where my mind is. At the time that Joseph Schmidt was trying to make his way back across Germany and recoup his fallen fortunes to end up in a DP camp in Switzerland, at that same time Hitler and Mussolini were, and Franco and the colonial army from North Africa were busy dismembering the Spanish Republic, the Second War of Spanish Independence, or the Spanish Civil War, as it's called. That was the opening volley of the Second World War. If the Western powers had decided that that wasn't going to happen, that the Spanish Republic, democratically elected, was going to be preserved, there might not have been a Second World War. It was an awful, terrible, bloody fight. Radicals from all over the world formed the international brigades and went to the defense of Spain. The Chilean consul to the Spanish Republic wrote a book while he was in Spain that the soldiers all carried with them, a book of poetry. I have a rare old copy of that book. The author writes, "My book, Spain in the Heart, was printed during the Spanish Civil War in a unique way. I believe few books in the extraordinary history of so many books have had such a curious birth and destiny. The soldiers learned to set type, but there was no paper. They found an old paper mill and decided to make it there. A strange mixture was concocted in the midst of falling bombs, in the midst of battle. They threw everything they could get their hands on into the mill, from an enemy flag to a bloody tunic of a Moorish soldier, and in spite of the unusual materials used and the total inexperience of its manufacturers, the paper turned out to be very beautiful. My book was the pride of those men who had worked to bring out my poetry in defiance of death. I learned that many carried copies of the book in their knapsacks instead of their own food and clothing. With those knapsacks over their shoulders, they set out on the long march to France. The endless column walking to exile was bombed hundreds of times. Soldiers fell, and the books were strewn over the road. Those Spaniards who managed to reach exile on the other side of the border were met with brutal treatment. The last copies of this impassioned book that was born and perished in the midst of fierce fighting were burned in a bonfire." That young Chilean consul was Pablo Neruda. I have an old copy of Neruda's book. I want to read you one of the poems from it, and then play you just a little bit of Charlie Hayden's Liberation Orchestra paean to the veterans of the Spanish Civil War. Well, it's a loud, raucous orchestra, but it captures the chaos and the fear of combat, and in the middle, one thin female voice bringing it all together. And then after Charlie Hayden, we'll hear my old friend Eddie Belchowski, a veteran of the Abraham Lincoln Brigade concert pianist who had one of his arms blown off during the advance over the Ebro River. Pablo Neruda. I lived in a barrio in Madrid, with bells, with clocks, with trees. From there you could see the parched face of Castile like an ocean of leather. My house was called the House of Flowers because everywhere geraniums were exploding. It was a beautiful house, with dogs and kids. Raul, remember? Remember Raphael? Federico, remember? Under the earth, remember my house with the balconies where the June light drowned the flowers in your mouth? My brother, oh, my brother. Everything was a great uproar, goods packed in salt, mounds of palpitating bread, markets in Mayorguez Barrio with its statue like a pallid inkwell among the hakes, buckets brimming with cooking oil, a deep throbbing of feet and hands filling the streets, meters, liters, a shrill essence of life, heaped up fish, a contexture of rooftops with a cold sun on which the weather vanes grow weary, a frenzy of fine ivory potatoes, tomatoes upon tomatoes stretching down to the sea. And one morning, it was all flames. One morning, blazing fires came out of the earth, devouring humans. And since then, fire, gunpowder, since then, and since then, blood.
Belchowski, veteran of the Abraham Lincoln Battalion. I dedicate this recording to all anti-fascists, living, dead, or yet to be born. In 1936, the Hitler-backed Franco attacked Madrid with four columns. The people resisted, and the city was never taken militarily. This is a song of that time. Los Cuatro Generales.
Cuatro generales, los cuatro generales, los cuatro generales, mamita mía, que serán ahorcado, que serán ahorcado. Madrid, que bien resistes, Madrid, que bien resistes. Madrid, que bien resistes, mamita mía, los bombardeos, los bombardeos. Madrid, dich wunderbar, Madrid, dich wunderbar, Madrid, dich wunderbar, mamita mía, dich wollten sich nehmen.
But your courageous children, mamita mia, they did not disgrace you. They did not disgrace you. Los cuatro generales, los cuatro generales, los cuatro generales, mamita mia, que serán arcado, que serán arcado.
That was a great Ed Belchowski. About 72 years old when he finally passed away. He was a great teacher to me. Well, the issue again. What would I do with my solitude? Dateline, somewhere north of Sumatra. For 6 days, our tiny ship battled the typhoon. Confined to my cabin by an attack of parrot fever, I tossed feverishly in my bunk, awakened only by the brutish bullying of Captain Sneed as he cursed our Malays back into the tattered rigging. The ceaseless drumming of the pumps as they labored against the inrushing sea hammered monotonously inside my skull, each stroke driving me relentlessly toward the brink of madness. The ship lurched violently, the cracking of timbers, shouts of panic, and the tortured creak of an ancient windlass. The cowardly dogs were making for the boats. She was breaking up. I hurled myself toward the door, only to be met by a bursting torrent of brackish seawater crashing over me. All was blackness. Somewhere far off, breakers roared. As I opened my eyes, I saw far above me a single gull turn and dive toward the sea. I lay upon a narrow strip of black volcanic sand amid a welter of seaweed and scarcely recognizable debris, all that was left of our craft, the Lipschitz Maru. Miraculously, the hot tropical sun had revived me, and I rose unsteadily to my feet, one thought gripping my pain-numbed mind. Marooned. Soon, I sorted out all that remained to me of the ship's stores. Little enough, but enough. An ancient hand-cranked stereo acquired by Captain Sneed, God rest the foul-mouthed soak, in a game of one-thumb at Port Moresby, a bottle of Pinot's lilac vegetal, and a tattered radio order form completed my meager stores. What was I to do? Carelessly I uncapped the Pinot's, and casting one contemptuous glance at the imprisoning sea, raised it to my lips and drank. From a shirt pocket I withdrew the ever-present one-inch library stub. Flattening the order form on the weathered case of the stereo, I scrawled, "Help! Marooned somewhere north of Sumatra. Immediate assistance would be much appreciated." I rolled the form tightly, inserted it into the now empty vegetal bottle, and capping it carefully, hurled it far out into the darkening sea. Weeks passed. I awoke suddenly, startled by the clatter of a gyrocopter circling low over the island. Tearing off the remains of my shirt, I clambered to the top of a mound of empty mollusk shells, my only sustenance, and waved it frantically over my head. They saw me. The gyrocopter banked, descended. A parachute materialized from the rear cockpit and wafted gently to my feet, while the gyro, its mission completed, sped off toward the east. Hysterically, I tore at the small package attached to the parachute, the wrapping, the box, and inside, what's this? Records. Phonograph records? No quince, no mango chutney, no pâté de foie gras, only records. It was then that I finally began to crack. But it hasn't been so bad these 20 years. Sometimes the blazing sun gets in behind my eyeballs, and I see visions, I do, but they pass. You see, I've had Garrison here with me. We're friends, Garrison and me. The old phonograph still spins away, and Garrison still sings. Some might say old Utah's daft he is, madder than a boiled owl, dancing that way round the old Victrola, a bone-white moon making ghosts of the heaped-up mollusk shells. But dance he does, turning, turning round and round, one hand flung upward to the starry sky. And if you ever pass this way again, and of an evening late walk the deck to catch a breath of cool night air, should you chance to hear a far-off tune borne high upon the tropical breeze, no, it's not the wind in the rigging, it's only Garrison singing the warm enchantment of a mermaid's song into an old sailor's heart. It's the news from Lake Ilbegat, where the men are men, the women are men, and the sheep are really nervous. Now let's listen to the music of Dylan Thomas.
Now as I was young and easy under the apple boughs about the lilting house, and happy as the grass was green, the night above the dingle starry, time let me hail and climb, golden in the heydays of his eyes. And honored among wagons I was prince of the apple towns, and once below a time I lordly head the trees and leaves, trail with daisies and barley down the rivers of the windfall light. And as I was green and carefree, famous among the barns about the happy yard, and singing as the farm was home in the sun that is young once only, time let me play and be golden in the mercy of his means. And green and golden I was huntsman and herdsman, the calves sang to my horn, the foxes on the hills barked clear and cold, and the Sabbath rang slowly in the pebbles of the holy streams. All the sun long it was running, it was lovely, the hay fields high as the house, the tunes from the chimneys. It was air and playing, lovely and watery, and fire green as grass. And nightly under the simple stars, as I rode to sleep, the owls were bearing the farm away. All the moon long I heard, blessed among stables, the night jars flying with the ricks, and the horses flashing into the dark. And then to awake, and the farm, like a wanderer white with the dew, come back, the cock on his shoulder. It was all shining, it was Adam and maiden, the sky gathered again, and the sun grew round that very day. So it must have been after the birth of the simple light in the first spinning place, the spellbound horses walking warm out of the whinnying green stable onto the fields of praise. And honored among foxes and pheasants by the gay house, under the new-made clouds, and happy as the heart was long, in the sun born over and over, I ran my heedless ways. My wishes raced through the house high hay, and nothing I cared at my sky-blue trades that time allows in all his tuneful turning, so few and such morning songs, before the children green and golden follow him out of grace. Nothing I cared in the lamb-white days that time would take me up to the swallow-thronged loft by the shadow of my hand in the moon that is always rising, nor that riding to sleep I should hear him fly with the high fields and wake to the farm forever fled from the childless land. Oh, as I was young and easy in the mercy of his means, time held me green and dying, though I sang in my chains like the sea.
Dylan Thomas, Fern Hill. Beautiful music and a story of childhood. Beats the hell out of pouring sodden popcorn off of a balcony, doesn't it? The solitude again as we draw toward a close here, I would not think of spending any vast amount of time by myself without taking with me some of the music of my favorite singer. Now, you've heard me play him before. I don't know why this is my favorite music. Is it sentiment? Is it, again, that world that we have lost? Is it something which is truly present in my mind or present in my life? I don't know. I can't judge it, so why should you? The singer's name is John McCormick. You're going to hear his signature song, I Hear You Calling Me, recorded in 1929. The great John McCormick, recorded in a concert in Los Angeles in 1929. The wonderful Irish tenor, who's I find so moving. Well, we're plunging toward a conclusion here. If I were off by myself someplace and had the ability to do it, I'd make sure that I took along music to fascinate, music that would get me not only moving my body, moving my feet, but get me thinking back over a long, long period of time. There are allied kinds of music, geographically separated and separated by time, by enormous distances, yet when brought together, sound so complete, as though they were always one. I would take with me a record called Rasa by Jody Stecker, my single favorite folk musician, and the sitar player Krishna Bhatt. Let's listen to them playing together, a bluegrass band, Krishna Bhatt, The Bramble and the Rose. Having to hush these voices so abruptly, but clock on the wall tells us that we are out of time. I will play the whole thing and so much more from that record as the weeks roll by. Thank you very, very much for tuning in. My name is Utah Phillips, and this has been Loafer's Glory, the Hobo Jungle of the Mind.
That's all, folks.